All right, guys, welcome to today's Founding Club Founding Members Call. I'm Joshua Pelsier. Brad, you're online as well? You there?
Yes. Yes, okay, after great. I unmute myself.
Yeah, he's going to talk away. Welcome back. We are, for this month, focusing on a very different kind of topic, and that is how to keep a woman interested in you over a long period of time. Sometimes, you know, years if you're looking at that, or months, or at the very least weeks and weeks and weeks. But I think that for me, it was more about keeping someone interested in me over a long period, long period of time, meaning that several years or maybe even forever, when I finally meet the woman that I was interested in being with for the rest of my life. So I'm going to talk a lot about that today. We talked about it last week. If you missed last week's call, it is in your members area, and you can download it in there and check it out. Again, just to kind of go over the normal sort of beginner stuff that we have to talk about here. If you are listening on the phone and you're calling in like some people are, then you're going to press *2 to raise your hand if you want to say something or you have a question. So if you have a question and you are on the phone, press *2 and it will raise your hand in the system and I'll know that you have a question. So at any point during this call, if you want to raise your hand, then I will go ahead and get to you and answer your question. If you're listening online, which I think most people are listening online to this call via webcast, a few people are, not a ton of people, but you can go ahead and fill out your questions in the Q&A box right there and submit them. And as soon as I get a moment and a break, I'll go to the questions. I've already gotten, I think, 3 questions for this call. Some of them are related. Some of them are completely random. But that's okay. So I'm going to go ahead and get to those. If you have any questions whatsoever, just let me know and post it in there. Brad, I'll be on this call too. Brad, if you can, go ahead and read through some of the Q&A now so you can sort of summarize some of them for me.
Okay.
That would be grand. And I'm going to go ahead and start this call out with sort of a review of what we went over recently and in the last call that we had, which was last week. So this week, or this month, we're focusing mostly on what's called relationship balance, or keeping women interested in you over a long period of time. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into this. I mean, there's gender roles, there are polyamory, or what I call poly dating, as well. There's determining which woman you should be exclusive with and which woman you shouldn't be. There's chemicals to think about, actual brain chemicals to think about, and chemicals within your body that actually shift as you begin to be in a long-term relationship with somebody. And some of sort of the major things that end relationships, another thing I call my 30-day notice method, and then what are called the 6 rules of long-term attraction. I'm going to go over as much as I can of that today. It's quite a lot of information, so if you have a pen and a piece of paper and you're ready to take notes, then awesome. If you're not, then you're going to want to go ahead and grab that somewhere and, you know, get ready, because it can be complicated if you don't do that. So make sure that you take your time, and if you have any questions whatsoever, like I said, please, if you're on the phone, press *2. And if you're online, then go ahead and submit your questions in that Q&A form right there on the page, and Brad will read through them, and we'll be getting to those as soon as I have a free moment. So first let me kind of go over some of the stuff that we went over last time, and then I'm going to go straight into the new content, because we have enough to keep us busy for the entire call. First, we're going to talk a little bit about the different stages in the map of interaction once you get into a relationship. So let's imagine that you are you walk up to a girl and you never met her before, so you want to say hello and you want to banter with her. You walk up, you do the thing, use perfect body language, you attract her, and she's interested. Then you move on to rapport, right? You start to get to know her a little bit better. You show a part of yourself that you didn't show before, and you reveal some vulnerabilities. She does too. You both connect. Nice, you know, move on to the next stage, so check that box off. The next stage is seduction, so then you become more of a man, you become sexual, and you get more turned on and aroused around her instead of she. And you guys end up having sex that night. And then you wake up the next morning. So when you wake up the next morning, you're sort of in an interesting place. A lot of guys ask me this question, and it's, where do I, where's my personality supposed to be the next day? Like, where am I, where should my head be? And I wake up the next morning, should I go straight into rapport again? Should I go back into seduction immediately? Which, you know, if you're feeling like it, go ahead and do it, obviously. If, you know, should I stay in attraction? You know, and is there a system for that? And the truth is, yes, there's a system for that. But when it comes to the stages of attraction, rapport, and seduction, if you haven't heard about that, by the way, you want to read The Tao of Badass and sort of brush up on the chapter called The System in The Tao of Badass. And that reveals this sort of process that I've heard several through several different places. There are lots of different people who've sort of followed this system's attraction, rapport, seduction in that order system. And the reason why they follow it is because it's just how it is. It works. It's the way to attract women. Now, Eric Markovic is also known as Mystery. He's a guy who I've had him on my show, my serious radio show a couple times, and met him. And he's a really, I think he's a really super nice guy. Some people don't like him, but I think he's great. But he came across this system when I think he took it from, I know it was from sales, so my guess is they took it from sales and applied it to his regular world, to the everyday interaction with women. And it worked really well. And that was, in the beginning, you have to, you know, create interest, make a connection, and then close the deal. That was a sales process. So, you know, for most people, that is, you know, that was what they used. They just used that for sales, but he was like, I think I can use this for something else. So he brought it into meeting women, and it ended up working perfectly. He just had to change a few things about it to make sure that it was copacetic and it worked. So, a really powerful system, but after you've hooked up with somebody, it seems kind of pointless to use that system. You know, it's sort of, you don't really need to show her why she needs to hang out with you because she's already slept with you and she already knows why she wants to hang out with you. It's a completely different kind of game at that point, and really what you're doing after that is what's called relationship balance. You're balancing out all the information or all the connection in the relationship with lightheartedness and also with sexuality. And it's a really, really important sort of distinction that you note that you're not just going in order, attraction, rapport, seduction, again, over and over and over again in the relationship. Instead, you are bouncing in between attraction, rapport, and seduction almost randomly and almost without any kind of order whatsoever or any kind of predictable order or pattern. And that's sort of what you need to do. Now, it's not just like 1 second you're playful, the very next second you're seducing somebody, which you can do, of course, once you've gone through it. But more than anything, you don't want to lead with one only, meaning you don't want to only be joking around and lighthearted and banter-like. You don't want to only be seductive all the time, and you don't want to only be connective, like rapport-driven and connection-based all the time. So instead, you want to make sure you're balancing all three of these out. If you spend an hour being lighthearted and bantery, you may want to spend 5 minutes in rapport, because rapport is a lot heavier than attraction is. So when you get into rapport, you maybe have 5 minutes of rapport could literally equal 50 hours of attraction work, because it's a completely different animal. It's more dense, and people typically in relationships will see, you know, maybe a maybe throughout a 20-year relationship a total of 100 hours of rapport in a 20-year relationship. So we're talking like very, very little rapport that happens. It's a really quick process, but it's a really open and vulnerable process. So if you do it, you know, just, you know, you want to balance it all out. You don't want to always be serious. You don't want to always be seductive, and you don't want to always be joking either. So you have to sort of assess where your relationship is in any given moment, and you have to work on the one that is lacking the most. Usually you'll get a sense as to, sort of like a sixth sense as to which of your which of these areas is lacking, meaning that you will sort of get a weird feeling around like that you need to have sex more or the relationship's going to fall apart, or you'll get a weird feeling that you need to do something fun and lighthearted or things are going to fall apart, or that you need to sort of introduce her to your parents or like, you know, involve her in your life more or something. And it's just this really strong draw for you to do that. Well, if you can pinpoint why it is that's happening, then you can follow up in an intelligent way. You can say, well, let me make this happen quickly, let me make it happen without pain or anyone noticing that I'm trying to do anything at all, and so that this is all balanced out and it's working. So what you want to do eventually is to the point where you are constantly in tune to what stage in the map of interaction you're in at any given moment with a girl that you're dating. Of course, relationship balance is that final stage, but you're also going to be balancing in between these different stages. I went over before that oftentimes what we'll do is we'll replace seduction with anger as we get into a relationship over time. And anger becomes the new sort of passion for us. So we get angry, we get mad, we get jealous, things like this. And all of the positive passion that we had, sexuality that we had in our relationship, begins to die off because we're getting our kicks from being angry instead of getting our kicks from being passionate. And that's sort of how it works. So you have to really pay attention to that. If you're seeing a lot of anger in your relationship, it's probably because you're not having enough sex because you've been supplementing this sexual energy with anger. It's other kind of passion. So keep that in mind. I could talk about that for a very long period of time, but I think we'll get back to that another day because there's so many other things too. And then we're just doing a recap right now. I went over before how gender role reversal is the number one reason why relationships fail. That is whenever women are testing men in order to see if a man is willing to actually lead the interaction and lead the relationship, and the guy doesn't see it as a test, and so he fails. And so ends up to where she starts playing the male gender role because she doesn't think he's man enough to do it. He starts resenting her because he wants to do that, but he's not allowed to. Like she doesn't let him, so he starts to resent her for it, and the relationship begins to fall apart. There was a pretty famous guy named Paul Ekman, Dr. Paul Ekman. And Paul Ekman is the discoverer, I guess, of what's called microexpressions. Microexpressions are tiny facial movements that sort of explain what we're feeling at any given moment. It's also a series of deflection techniques and deception techniques that we use are sort of rolled up into one. And he was the main consultant on a TV show, a pretty popular TV show on HBO, I believe, called Lie to Me. And if you've never seen Lie to Me, it's a phenomenal show.
That was on HBO.
Is it or is it not? I don't know.
I don't know.
I can check it out real quick and see. But it was no, it was on Fox. Never mind. Not at all the same thing. I don't watch TV at all, so this is all on my computer. I watch it on Netflix, but yeah, it's a fantastic show. And if you haven't seen it and you are studying body language, it's a powerful show to watch because within Lie to Me, they talk about actual real deception techniques that I studied whenever I was studying body language. I mean, this is normal, everyday, like common knowledge for people who study body language. And they're showing it being used in real life. It's just a really awesome, powerful training tool to sort of get you entertained and yet educated at the same time on this sort of topic. One of the most powerful things that I ever learned was reading body language on a very, very particular scale, like a scale that's really almost scary. Brad, you've seen me do this
yeah.
From time to time. It's got to be difficult to work with a guy like that. But I can
see... No, it just makes a very honest workplace
because yeah.
nobody can lie to you, really.
Well, I mean, people have deceived me before, but I have when someone does it, I'm usually not on point. I don't even see it happening at all. Like, I don't see it coming. And then I'm definitely deceivable. That's happened before. But at the same time, and actually someone who's really good at deception can deceive me almost every time. That's one of the things that I'm aware of is that, and that you don't want to be aware of as well, is that just because you know what you're doing doesn't mean that no one can stop you or no one can deceive you, no one can trick you, and no one knows more than you. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get really, really, really good at attraction, is because I didn't want to, you know, show up at a bar with my girlfriend one day and then happen to run into the one guy who was better than me at attraction, you know? Because I didn't want that to happen. I wanted to be at a place where it was like, no matter what, I'm always the best at, you know, regardless of where I am. So the way that I did that is I made, I supplemented my attraction ability when I was in a relationship with my ability to grow quickly. And this was a really powerful thing because it equals value in a relationship. So I'll get into that now. Gender role reversal was one of the main reasons why relationships end. we went over the four stages of relationship balance, or four, not stages, but the four elements of relationship balance. They are compliance, power, value, and neediness. Those four different areas. Again, this is in the Tao of Badass if you want to get more detail on this. Or you can listen to last week's call. I went into a lot of detail on that. But I went over those four areas, and you have to balance those areas in order to keep things cool and collected in your relationship and keep everything moving forward. Also, it's an indicator, if you use these properly, you use them as an indicator of what's truly the problem. Because if you've ever been in a relationship before that's been long-term, the biggest problem is that women speak a different language than men do. It's an issue. you don't want to get into a conversation with a girl, think that you understand her completely and that everything's on everyone's on the same page, and then all of a sudden realizing that that it's not the case. So you want to make sure that you're understanding everything that she's saying, and that you're on the same page as her, and that you can understand it, and you can get to the real point and the real problem. And relationship balance, you can use the compliance, power, value, and neediness to see where the actual problem is, and then address it, and then you won't have any issues in your relationship. As they come up, you'll be able to knock them down immediately, and they won't own you. So I went over that a bit. Now I'm going to get into something. The next thing I really wanted to talk about. I sort of breezed over a few of these other topics before, and I did not get in the detail. So I really want to get into a lot of detail today. First, I want to go over something called polydating, or polyamory, which is what I typically call it. The question I think that should be on your mind if you're considering being in a monogamous relationship with a girl is, should I be in a monogamous relationship or should I be in a polyamorous relationship? Now, let me explain what polyamory or polydating is, and then let me explain what monogamy is, and sort of so you can see the difference here. We have been trained as a species, as a culture, to only date one person at a time, right? That's just what it is. We're only supposed to date one person at a time. And when we step outside of that and we start dating multiple people at the same time, then we can really get into a lot of trouble. People look down on that. They think it's weird. They think it's wrong. Usually people who aren't doing it, who are jealous, think that. But either way, you know, people still feel that way. It's because they've been brought up to believe that. So instead of just sort of buying straight into that, I want to sort of take apart this concept of monogamy and decide whether or not it's right for you really, or it's not right for you. Because at the end of the day, you have to decide on a per relationship basis what is going to be right in that particular moment for you. So just to break it down a little bit, we are, like I said, it's very, our culture is very focused on monogamy. We think that monogamy is the way to go. It's the only way to go. And if you do anything but monogamy, then you're just lying to yourself, or you are helpless or hopeless and wandering around and whatever, right? Now, there are a lot of reasons to be monogamous, but there are a lot more reasons to be polyamorous, and I'll explain why in just a moment. Monogamy is basically a celebration of and a decision to be with one person only for an extended period of time, even if that period of time is 2 days. It's for some laid out period of time. So if you are monogamous with somebody, then what you're doing is you're saying, I'm going to give up attempting to and succeeding at attracting other women while I'm with you. Now, this makes complete sense if you get the feeling that this girl may be the girl that you want to be with for the rest of your life. If you even want to be that guy, you know, if you want to get married. I know that I do someday, but some guys don't want to. So if you find a woman and you're like, okay, well, this is the woman that I want to be with for the rest of my life for sure, then it makes sense for you to be monogamous, because in that moment, you're not wasting either of your time. But if you meet a girl and you know for sure that you're not going to be with her forever, you're doing both of you a disservice by being monogamous. Now, this is a place, most monogamy, I'd say 99% of monogamy, and I'm being pretty, actually, I'm being pretty liberal with that. It's probably more like 99.999% of relationships that are monogamous come from insecurity. And that means that they are coming from a scarcity mentality. They're monogamous because they're afraid that if they're not, they're going to lose the person that they're attracted to, and they're not going to have them anymore. And that we play this game with each other all the time. We say, okay, well, if I'm not the only person for you, then you can go somewhere else and leave, and I'm going to find somebody else. And as guys, we're like, I don't want to lose this chick. You know, I want to have her. I want her to be there. I wanted her to be with me. And so we end up connecting and sort of latching on to this one girl, and we end up screwing everything up because now we know we don't want them, but we just don't want them to leave yet. So there's a very specific reason why I think you should be monogamous. And I think that most people's default state really should be polyamory, which, you know, some people would call playing the field, right? Or dating around or whatever you want. I call it polydating. And polydating has a very specific step-by-step process. You're going to see, I just finished a product called Polydating, and it's, let me just see that I created a tagline for it. I'm just going to read the tagline because I forgot what it was. But it should really help you understand what it is I'm trying to do here. But it's a man's guide to ethically dating and fucking multiple women. That's my goal from this product. And I'm going to go over briefly what it is that I talk about in that product, just briefly, because I don't have time to go into everything. But it's very important for relationship balance on this founding members call, because it will be the way, if you decide that you're not ready for monogamy with somebody, then you really want to explore, or at least accept, or, you know, entertain the idea of being polyamorous for a period of time and see how you like it. I remember whenever I first did it, I was scared shitless because it didn't come up to, it wasn't just my idea to do it. I mean, I had a girl that I was attracted to tell me that she was polyamorous, and it freaked me the fuck out. I didn't know what to think about that. So, but before I freaked out on her and was like, well, screw this, I'm leaving, and, you know, what I think is the natural tendency for most guys to do, which is actually in your favor, by the way, that most guys freak out when they hear this concept. I sat and I was like, you know, let me just let this happen. And I'll think about it for a little while and see what I think. So eventually I decided I was going to give it a try, and I did. And it was, you know, one of the best things that I'd ever decided to do, because it allowed me to date a lot of women in a short period of time and learn a lot of lessons very quickly. I was also very, very honest and open with all the women that I was dating. So I got into a bunch of relationships at the same time with usually I never got over 7 women at the same time. I just couldn't date more than 7 women at the same time. For some reason, it was like once I got to 7, things started to fall apart. But it was usually around between 4 and 7 women that I was dating at once. And I kind of looked at business and relationships the same way here. I would have like 3 jobs at once because I got bored quickly with jobs. So I'd have 3 at once, and then I'd have several women at the same time. So the benefits of having several women are tenfold, really, but let's just go over a couple of them. One is that there's no dissonance. There's no jealousy, resentment, nothing in those relationships. The reason why is because you have no commitment exclusively to each other. So if you find a better option, you leave and you go with that better option. So there's no reason to resent anyone, because the main reason why we resent each other is because we don't feel like this person is our best option, and we feel like we settled for them and that they made us commit early when we weren't really sure we wanted to. So we're sort of sacrificing that in order to be with them, to show them that we love them and we care about them. But when we get in there, we quickly realize this isn't what we wanted, and that can be a big, big problem. So the first thing is that the relationships are higher quality, just in general. Second thing is that you can learn a lot faster. You can learn what takes most guys 10 years to learn, you can learn in 2 weeks. Being polyamorous. I mean, sex-wise, I mean, attraction or approach-wise, I mean, even rapport-wise and relationship balance-wise as well. I mean, all your powers that you're looking to improve and increase, approaching everything, you learn on light speed. It's just like a turbo button for your abilities with women and your improvement with your abilities with women. So it's really, really powerful with that. Another reason why it's another great idea is because you are not wasting time. Not that, you know, you're wasting time with one person specifically, but you're not wasting time going from one person to another, to another, to another. And you're not breaking up with these women. You don't have to, because you're not exclusive. So there's not any pain. It's like the ideal relationship. The funny thing is that we're already doing this. All of us are already doing this. We just lie about it and we hide it because we're afraid that no one's going to accept it. Now, this is
the weird thing.
Yeah, that's what's silly about it, you know?
It is what is dating, you know? Like, that's when people say, oh, we're just dating or something, you know, that's what they mean.
Right.
But like you said, they're afraid to admit that.
You know, it's funny because when people say we're just anything, it means that they're probably there's probably a miscommunication between them and the other person. Like, oh, we're just roommates. Like, okay, well, maybe they probably think that you're more than roommates, you know? Or like, maybe it's like, oh, we're just friends. Oh, they probably think that you're just more than friends. That's usually how it is. So when I hear we're just dating, it means that it's probably a pretty big gray area around that, you know? And that does happen often, you know? And you're right, Brad. There's a lot of, well, they didn't ask, and so I'm not going to tell them, or I'm not going to have the conversation, or I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just going to be passive-aggressive about it. There's a lot of that stuff going around in monogamous relationships that end up really ruining a lot of them. So
I have a friend who would call it the DTR conversation.
What is that?
Define the relationship.
Oh, I thought you were going to say down to like reality.
No, it's basically like the DTR bomb. Like, has she dropped the DTR bomb on you yet? You
know? Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's the problem is that we're as a culture, we're looking at women to be the ones who do this, because really, as men, most of us want to be with multiple women at the same time. That's what we want. And most women don't want to be tied down like we think they do. You know, they just say that because they don't want to look like, you know, they're sluts, or they want their parents to respect them. It's all these little social problems that they have. So instead of sort of buying into those, I implore you to sort of explore this concept. I want to sort of briefly go over it right now, and then I'm going to move on to how to tell whether or not you should be in a polyamorous relationship, or whether or not you should be in a monogamous relationship. So polydating is all about one concept, and that one concept is a state of dating called the waterfall. So it's like a place that you get to where things begin to happen on their own accord, as in you don't have to approach anymore. You don't have to go online for online dating at all. You don't have to introduce yourself to anybody that you don't know. You don't have to try. And most of the sex happens to you. Like, women will come up and they'll be very open about it. And they'll just be like, I want to have sex with you. You get a lot of respect from guys, obviously, whenever you do this, because guys think that you're made of magic beans. But you also get a lot of respect from women because they have never seen this before. So the state called the waterfall is at the end of this process. It's a six-step process, and the last step is called the waterfall. But the rest of the five steps are the setup, the objections, the reinforcement, the sex, the search, and then the waterfall finally. So that's the six steps of polydating. And your goal is to get to that state of the waterfall. It's kind of like whenever you push a lot of people describe it like this, and this is like a really classic, easy way to explain it. When you make a tiny snowball and then you roll it down a giant hill, at the bottom of the hill, you have a giant, giant snowball that's like demolishing buildings, you know? Nothing can stop it. It sort of continues under its own weight and gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until eventually you've got so much interest and intrigue around you in your life that you create gravity. And that's when women become a sort of waterfall around you. It's like someone turning on a faucet and it just happens, you know? You walk up the faucet, you do one thing, you turn it on, and it works. So you always have water there. It's always going to happen, you know. So you want to get to a place where, in polyamory, where you can tap into the powers of the waterfall. And that's whenever you have gravity with your relationships. So the setup is basically a specific – this is one of the biggest problems that I see guys do or run into. It's a specific way of bringing this up at a specific time. In a specific way, saying the specific words, like everything is very tested in the beginning. It's more fickle in the beginning because no one knows, you don't know if this person is going to accept what you're saying or not. So in the very beginning of an interaction with a girl, you don't know whether or not she's going to sit down and listen to you and be intrigued by it, or she's going to be turned off by it. So a lot of guys tiptoe around this, and that's the absolute worst thing you could possibly do. When you tiptoe around it, then you solidify for sure that it's not going to work out. So instead, you want to get straight to the point. You want to sort of chase after this and say in a specific way. When I first got into this, I started testing different ways of saying this. This was my biggest obstacle in the beginning, was that I'd walk up and I'd go, I'm polyamorous. And they'd say, what is that? And I'd say, I sleep with lots of women at the same time. And they'd be like, bye. you know, and they'd leave. So I was like, okay, I said something wrong. So then, but I realized that they didn't leave until I said I sleep with lots of women at the same time. So I walked up the next time and I said, I'm polyamorous. And I said, what does that mean? So I realized that the I'm polyamorous part is not a problem. You know, it's what comes after that. So I found a really unique way of bringing up the polyamory conversation in a way that's not intrusive, scary, or anything. That it's not needy either. And it comes across very smoothly. And then once you get it out and she starts to talk to you about it a little bit, you move on to the second stage of this process. This will always happen. It's like clockwork. You can just time it. You know, you can be like, okay, we're going to talk about this for another minute. And then she's going to start asking me questions and you're going to be in the objection stage. I've had some girls, by the way, have very, very, very few objections. Sometimes you'll get a glance and she'll start looking you up and down for a second to see if you're fully congruent. And that'll be her only objection as she's trying to check to see if that you're actually this guy, you know. But almost across the board, women are intrigued by this. Once you get to the second stage after the setup, you get to objections. The objections are a series of sort of like tests or kind of look at it like this. It's like a ninja test. I mean, you're like walking into the woods blindfolded and you're going to get shurikens thrown at you. That's really what's happening here. You're getting a series of objections that women have. Very common objections, though every woman thinks that their objections are specific to them and only to them. So they don't know that every woman has the same set of six or seven objections. But you will, and you'll know this, so you'll be able to respond back. So if you know how to overcome these objections, you can just say what needs to be said and have your own version of it. Of course, I go over everything piece by piece in polydating. But it's not, you know, I'm not trying to pitch that to you guys. I'm just saying I don't have time to go into that right now. But there is a stage full of objections second. The third stage is what's called the reinforcement. This is where a lot of guys, if they become polyamorous, they skip this stage because they're so eager to get to the next stage. The next stage is sex, right? So they're eager to get to that. So the reinforcement is where you are solidifying the polyamory or polydating profile into your interaction. When you say it in the beginning, they'll listen to it and they'll say, okay, cool, that sounds great. And then you'll keep going, you'll get past their objections, and then you'll have to reinforce it again. You have to. If you don't, there are two key linchpin moments in an interaction with a girl that if you don't reinforce the polyamory or polydating template or sort of frame for that relationship or interaction, then it'll all fall to pieces. She may still sleep with you, but then as soon as she starts sleeping with you, she's going to want you to be monogamous with her, even if you don't want to. Even though you said that you're polyamorous, it doesn't matter. So to keep that in mind, that's sort of an advanced concept a lot of guys don't get. So, the fourth stage is the sex. This is the stage that obviously everyone digs a whole lot. The sex is in a polyamorous relationships is typically amazing because you have several women to choose from. They're typically going to be in such an open state and comfortable around you that they're willing to have threesomes with you and hook up with you while you're hooking up with another girl in the other room. Then they'll take turns. And it's really, a lot of women are very, very open with you sexually. They'll try stuff with you that they've never done before. You'll be trying stuff that you've never done before. And it's a really amazing sexual exploration process. It's kind of like 10 years worth of relationship rolled up into a few weeks whenever you're dating these women. Again, that's one of the powerful benefits of polydating. There's a lot of rules for the sex. Like, for example, you always want to use protection when you're sleeping with multiple partners. It's just a really bad idea. It's not fair to the women if you have unprotected sex and then start, you know, spreading out their love to each other, whatever they got. That's not really fair. So you want to make sure that you keep that in mind and that you protect yourself, not just yourself, but also the women that you're dating. And then there is the search, which is the fifth stage. The search is the stage after sex comes, and that is when most guys skip this too, which is why most guys start out being polyamorous and then meet one girl and then they're monogamous all of a sudden. That doesn't allow you to get to the waterfall. It'll never happen if you stop there. So as soon as the sex happens, a lot of guys stop. You want to continue. The search is whenever you continue to search for and act as if you're single. You have to. You have to search for other women. There's a specific way of doing that so that you can sort of create this vortex that sucks women into it, and that way women come to you instead of having to go all over the place. And then finally, you sort of attain this level of what's called the waterfall. And the waterfall is how to manage women, new women, constantly coming into your life wanting to sleep with you and wanting to date you. It becomes sort of a novelty, and any woman who is interested in anything close to this or needs it in any kind of way will come to you, and she'll be very open about it. I have a friend, you may have heard of him before, his name's Hypnotica. His real name's Eric, again, there's a lot of Erics. But Hypnotica has, he's polyamorous often. I'm not sure if he is right at the moment, but he typically is. And he is, he's had to get used to women sort of constantly chasing after him and constantly wanting to get in his pants. And he says, when he starts talking about it, it's like, you know, he has so many options for women that women will literally say, oh, look, I'm dating someone right now, but if we break up, I'll let you know. And then 4 months later, they'll say, hey, we broke up. Can I come over? You know, and they'll just come over and sleep with him immediately. And that's because he is this guy. He has sort of attained the state of the waterfall, and that's what allows him to have this sort of gravity around women. So what you want to do is you want to consider whether or not you should be polyamorous or do poly dating, or you should be monogamous. And right now I'm monogamous, and if I wasn't monogamous, I would be polyamorous. This is kind of how it was. I wouldn't be. There's no in between. Now if you're single at the moment, currently, then basically you are polyamorous. That's what you are. You can start telling people that you are. It's not a big deal. Even if you have no girlfriends, it won't matter. But you have to sort of get used to the concept and use it as an option. It's a huge option, and you don't want to feel bad about dating multiple people because that's what you want to do. And if you only want to date one person, that's completely different, of course. But this is exactly how I found the person that I really wanted to be with. Is that I was polyamorous, and this is another one of the benefits, by the way, being polyamorous. I was, you know, poly dating a lot of women, and I when I had lots and lots of women that I was really attracted to all around me, but weren't perfect for me, then I don't have to settle for anything less than absolutely perfect because I have so many backup plans hanging out. You know, it's like I'm doing this already. I don't need to worry about it. I have lots of options. So if things don't work out with a specific girl, I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to be needy. And all of your body language and everything begins to align automatically. And this is what I'm saying the state of the waterfall is. But how do you tell if you should be polyamorous or if you should be monogamous? That's really the question. So if you want to be monogamous, you're going to have to prove to yourself that this is a relationship that you want to last forever. Now, a lot of guys will lie to themselves about this. So there's a very simple system. You can sort of, it's like a diagnostics test. You can run on yourself. And if it comes up negative, then it's negative. If it comes up positive, then it's positive. And this, a lot of guys will do whatever they can to rig this test, but it's not in your best interest to do that. So I'll just tell you a little bit about it. In the 1980s, there was a psychologist named Robert Sternberg. Robert Sternberg was a psychologist of love. He studied a lot of stuff having to do with love, and a lot of people didn't really listen to what he had to say because no one really cared at the time. Instead, it was all about abnormal psychology, and that's what was really bringing in the money. So he studied for a little while, and then he sort of abandoned it and stopped doing it. And I sort of picked up where he left off and started looking at some of his concepts. One of his concepts was called the triangular theory of love, which I eventually made the consummate love triangle. The consummate love triangle is basically a process you can go through to figure out whether or not you should be monogamous with a girl or polyamorous. And it's relatively simple. In any kind of relationship or interaction that you have, you're going to have one, two, or three of these three areas that I'm going to go over. If you have one of these three areas and that's it, then you will not hook up with or date a girl. That's how it is. If you have two, you will still do it, but you shouldn't be monogamous. If you have all three, then you should consider being monogamous. So in most interactions that you have, you're going to have one. That's it, right? And some interactions, you're going to have two. Those two, when you have interactions that have two parts of the consummate love triangle, you are going to want to immediately move into polyamory with that person. And in some interactions, you're going to have all three or the distinct potential to have all three. In which case you need to tread lightly because you tread on your dreams. That's kind of the point behind that. So what are these three areas? Well, it's relatively simple. They are sexual attraction, which is the first one. This is where that's pretty obvious. I mean, if you're sexually attracted to a girl, then you have sexual attraction with her, period. And she has to have that with you as well, typically. But you can create sexual attraction on the spot using a lot of the concepts that you learn in Tao. So if that's the case, then really you're just looking to see who you're sexually attracted to. The second one is emotional attraction. This is rapport. And since you know how to build rapport on the spot with, you know, studying concepts in Tao, then you don't have to worry about this one either. You can just create it in the moment. The last one is a very, very important one that you cannot create in the moment. And this is the one that most guys will ignore and not bring to a relationship and not pay attention to. The bad part about ignoring this is that women will look to you as a man to bring this to a relationship. And if you're ignoring it and you're not bringing it to the relationship, then you have lots of problems, including the beginnings of gender role reversal in the relationship. And that's called logical attraction. Logical attraction is logistics. Basically, does this relationship make sense? If I were a computer and I were looking at our relationship, what would I say? Would I say, yes, this makes sense? Or would I say, no, this doesn't make sense? Now, some romantic guys are going to have a really hard time doing this because it's really difficult to look at yourself logically, especially when you're in a romantic state of mind. That means that your emotional brain's heightened and you have to sort of succumb to it. So you have to put yourself through this test and ask yourself whether or not you have rapport, whether or not you're sexually attracted to her, and whether or not logistics make complete sense. Now, logistics can be life direction, like where is her life headed? What does she want from life? That kind of thing. It can be religions, can be living in the same town. It can be whether or not she – actually, if you've mapped out the relationship balance, compliance, power, value, and neededness like we did in the last call, the last founding member's call, then you will be able to tell if she's not comfortable with you going to the place that you really want to be with your value, let's say, for example. If she's like, I want you to bring your value down. I don't want you to be that needed outside of the relationship. If she feels that way and you want your value to go up, then the logical attraction is not there and the relationship will end. So what you want to do is monitor all the logical attraction. Now, let me talk about a little bit about logistics from a perspective of controlling them. The only way that you can control logistics or logical attraction is in the future. You can't control them in the moment, meaning that if I walk into a bar, I see a girl, and I realize our logical attraction is not there, I can't do a couple of things, you know, wave my hand a couple of different ways, and then all of a sudden, logical attraction is there. I can't do that. And you can't do it either. It's because it's a lifestyle. And it's an individual lifestyle choice, meaning that whenever you get to the point where you are, you've made a decision about what direction you want to head in your life, if a girl walks in and she's worth you giving up all your dreams to go be with her, you will always know that you gave up all your dreams to be with her. And the first sign of any kind of a problem, you'll start to blame her for making you leave all your dreams in order to be with her instead, even though it was completely your decision, it was your choice. This is the problem with logical attraction, the reason why most guys fail to bring logical attraction to a relationship and why most guys ruin their interactions with women, especially relationships. So if you have two of the three, then you can be polyamorous, unless, of course, one of those two is not sexuality. Meaning, if you have logical attraction and emotional but no sexual attraction, you really shouldn't be polyamorous with this person because you're not going to be sleeping with them or hooking up with them or consummating them in any kind of way sexually. You won't be validating them. And that's not very good. I mean, everyone wants sexual validation. Women especially are going to want sexual validation. So you need to be able to give that to them in your relationship with them. So keep that in mind. I know it sounds kind of silly. Like it may sound like that seems like a no-brainer. Or that, you know, of course you want to sleep with them. But it really is your duty at some point to be sexual and to validate them sexually. Because you'll get women, unless they're really, 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 really mature, you'll get women who are attracted to you, who want to be around you, who like you a lot. And if you aren't sexually attracted to them, then you'll drag them along with you. This is not about being passive aggressive and like non-confrontational. This is about being very confrontational and sort of being open and completely honest from the very beginning. So you can't hide stuff in a polyamorous relationship. So you definitely can't do that. You don't want to string her along. Plus, if you do have logical attraction and emotional attraction and you're faking that you have sexual attraction, she'll begin to fall in love with you. And now you have a girl who you're not attracted to sexually who loves you. And that's not very good. It can be a big problem. So if you have sexual attraction and emotional attraction but no logical attraction, that's what's called hopeless romantic love. Hopeless romantic love is whenever, since your logistics are not there, logical attraction is not being monitored by you, then there's nothing holding back the emotional charge in the relationship. So the relationship feels amazing for a very, very short period of time. It's like a firework. I mean, you light it, it burns really bright. They say, you know, the candle that burns twice as bright lasts half as long, basically. I'm paraphrasing on that one. But that's sort of the concept. That's the idea. You know, if you are if you're in a relationship with somebody and you don't have logical attraction, it's a ticking time bomb, and you will not want it to end. You'll be thinking, well, this is going to end at some point, and I just want to enjoy it while it's here. If you ever get that thought crossing your mind, you know for a fact that you're now in a hopeless romantic relationship, and it's only a matter of time before you're both really hurting. That's the kind of relationship that you really need to be poly-dating in that situation. But since you're already monogamous in that moment, then it could be a big, big problem. And if you have the final one, if you have sexual attraction and logical attraction, but no emotional, you have basically a fuck buddy. You have a person with whom you're comfortable being in the attraction phase and the seduction phase, but not the rapport phase. And so that's what's called superficial love. And that's okay. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just not something that you should bring to monogamy for you. It should be polyamorous in that situation as well. People who are missing emotional attraction or rapport in a relationship are some of the easiest to build polyamorous relationships with. Meaning, if you both avoid rapport, then you're both probably comfortable with random hookups. And those are people who that you're typically comfortable with being in. They're typically relieved to hear that you want to be in a polyamorous relationship. So keep that in mind. So you want to see if you have two of these three, if you have sexual and one other and not three altogether, then you want to go down the path of polydating. You can usually tell within the first 5 seconds of talking to someone, A, whether or not you're sexually attracted to them. That's the biggest one. You know, you can say that in the first second you see them, you know, you become sexually aroused or sexually attracted to them, to these women. So if you are sexually attracted to somebody, then you have to be very careful about how deep you go into rapport. Because if you find out that if you don't want to marry this person or date them exclusively and only them, and you want to stay polyamorous with them, like it all seems really awesome, except it's not 100% perfect for you. You're not 100% there. Then you want to make sure that you leave your options open. And whenever you do go into rapport, you have a completely different kind of rapport. It's more of a polydating rapport than a deep rapport. You can still open up. You can still transfer emotion, but instead of it being like you're in a romance novel, it's more like you are buddies, you know, like you're just helping them out. Brad, you had an experience with this recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I definitely feel like a lot of the things you're saying are covering my situation.
Why don't you sort of talk about what happened, if you don't mind. I know you don't have to go into too much detail, but if you don't mind, it would be really great to sort of share your experience recently with this person you recently met.
Sure. Well, I basically, had a, experience where I kind of started off the relationship with, the sort of romance novel opening, you know, where I did, one of the, approaches that we talked about at the attraction and action event.
Yep.
And I went over, you know, sat down next to her and just said, hey, I noticed you from over there. And I just had to come say something because you have the most beautiful eyes. And she did, you know, I had noticed her and I was like, wow, that girl's like super cute. So went over and talked to her and blah, blah, blah.
blah, blah, blah is a lot, but that's okay. We'll skip it.
It is a lot, but, it, you know, there's a lot to tell. But basically, you know, hung out a couple times and, something happened that doesn't typically, you know, hasn't happened to me in a long time, which is, you know, I got sort of rejected, you know, like I went to kiss her and got the cheek. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. And of course it just made me want her all the more, you know?
Right.
And, you know, after talking with you, sort of realized that she was, as far as the Avatar system goes, she was the romantic. You know, she's,
that's just to kind of like, you know, I keep mentioning this in like every call, but I haven't explained it too much. And I won't really, because it's another conversation. But there are four different types of women, and if you can recognize what type she is, then you can sort of seduce her in a specific way that that is to her personality type. So that this girl's type is called romantic. So
yeah, go ahead, Brad. And realizing that sort of completely changed my strategy for the second time we hung out, and it worked like gangbusters, as they say. You know.
Yep.
There was like one part of that first night that we hung out that I noticed completely was like different. And that was when I did this sort of cheesy, silly thing, you know, that would only happen in a movie. Most people wouldn't do that like on a first date or a first like time hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of went with that idea for the next time we hung out. And I really focused on, you know, building lots of rapport, you know, mm-hmm. and in that process, we built a really, really strong connection and it really felt like we were starting to build this tiny little world where nobody else existed. It was just us, you know?
Right.
And, it definitely felt like a movie. Like I've never had an experience as powerful as that where, nothing else existed and just anything was like nothing was off the table as far as like sharing emotions or having new experiences, you know. Definitely had some new experiences that I've never had before, and mm-hmm. it was just like amazing. And you know, the big thing that we talked about that happened in this process is that, you know, we call the in the Tao of Badass we call the rapport process, you know, part of that is the love creation
mm-hmm.
Formula. And part of that people might not recognize is that I sort of always understood it as like, okay, yeah, I've seen girls, you know, start to fall in love with me before, and like that's cool. You know, that means a lot. That's a really high compliment to pay, and you know, that feels really good, and mm-hmm. and I like that interaction too, but typically I wouldn't feel the same way. But if done correctly, you know, the love creation formula, you can't really help but feel the same way, you know.
Right. It's a two-way street, and I do explain that in Tao, and you knew that going in too. It's just like you have to experience it, otherwise you can't just,
yeah,
like, you can't just know it and then be like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. You know, you have to really
exactly.
experience it. And that's really part of the process. So if you,
yeah.
you know, you went through this and I wanted to sort of make a note here that this girl is not from the U.S. and she was about to leave. And because
right.
of that, I knew immediately that this was not going to be a monogamous relationship. But if you went for it, that you were going to fall into this realm, which is hopeless romantic love.
Right. Yeah,
that's one of the reasons why your connection with her was so deep and powerful so fast, because
yes.
you had nothing holding it back. Right. You had no
right.
You have no
there were no
attraction. You know?
Yeah, there were no logistical considerations other than the fact that it could not last longer than 5 days.
Right. Which made it awesome. You know,
it was, I mean, definitely was a really brightly burning flame. I mean, it was
mm-hmm.
it was incredibly passionate. It was incredibly deep connection. It was, I keep telling friends and things like that that, you know, I fell in love. I mean, you were the only person who was like, well, yeah, of course, you know,
mm-hmm. right.
You knew that was going to happen. But everyone else is like, what? How long did you know her? And honestly, we actually only spent time for like 3 days, you know, because the last couple of days she was like running around and getting ready to fly back. But
right.
it was the most intense, I mean, beautiful, painful experience. Because, you know, part of that, like that whole hopeless romantic thing is it hurts too, you know, like it hurts when you really like fall in love with somebody and then suddenly can't be with them or.
Right.
Whatever. And
yeah, I mean, that is part of the process. I mean, you have you sort of trade that off, and that's okay because you know it ahead of time. But if you don't know it ahead of time, this is where it becomes a problem. You know, if you don't know that you're getting into this sort of whirlwind that's going to end at some point,
mm-hmm.
you get into it and you think this is like exactly what you've been looking for. You start treating it like a monogamous relationship, and then all of a sudden, everything comes crashing down around you, and that's really, really bad. So instead of, you know, instead of falling straight into a monogamous relationship, which I know you had a lot of like very strong desire to do because that's what happens. And I didn't really talk about that too much, but I'm presuming that's what you experienced. So whenever you get in that situation, there's a very strong desire to be this person forever because you think, you know, your logical brain's completely shut down and your emotional brain goes, this feels so good. Then I want this to expand from now till forever, you know, this needs to last forever. And the problem is that the logistically, forever requires logistics, you know?
Yeah.
And if you don't have those logistics sort of considered and brought into the relationship, then it ends like that. So, but it was absolutely worth it. I'm not saying shy away from hopeless romantic relationships, but I am saying that when you get into one, recognize it ahead of time and recognize it as it's happening so that you don't sort of fall into a trap of this super emotional, hopeless romantic relationship for a long period of time. You know, and I don't know if you know this or not, Brad, but the girl that I'm dating now, Kelsey, Kelsey and I started out the exact same way that you did with that girl. We were like very much a whirlwind, kind of like amazing, powerful, except we didn't sleep together. I didn't even kiss her. I just loved her, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just that amazing, amazing feeling. And it was like the moment I saw her, that's how I felt. And so for me, it was this completely hopeless romantic relationship. And I was really sensitive to that idea later on in life because I remembered her. And she was the one girl that I just loved as soon as I saw her. And, you know, eventually I went back and was able to get her. But I had to let all the logistics, all the logical attraction reset itself and align in the proper way before I could go get her. So for, you know, for this relationship, like it was so important. Logical attraction was so important to me that I gave up the one girl that I actually loved more than anyone else. And I gave her up in order to really figure this stuff out so I wouldn't ruin it. So that's how important it is. Eventually I went back and got her. So that works out, you know, it worked out for me at the end. That makes for a good movie.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a very important thing to consider is that, you know, you may have to leave this person for them in the interim, you know, leave them for now and then so you can have them later, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't feel like that's something they're willing to do. So, that would be a really classic example. If she lived in town, but her life was going a different direction than, or yours was, whatever, you know, and the logical attraction wasn't there, then she'd be a perfect candidate for polyamory. In fact, she's the perfect candidate for polyamory, period. But since you guys aren't living in the same country, it's fairly obvious that's what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. Plus she's the romantic, so you don't have to worry about that very much. Because they like their options to be open as much as possible.
Yeah.
until the very, very, very last second. So, I want to go into a couple more things here. And then I want to start getting some of these questions. Brad, if you could you read over the top question real quick? I know you already have, but just to read over it again while I'm saying this, and then so I'm done.
Sure.
If you could paraphrase it and let me know what it's about. We get some long questions. Again, guys, if you have any questions at all and you're on a phone, press *2. If you are listening on the web, then you can just put your question right in the question box there. I believe it's to the left. I don't see the page, but I'm guessing it's to the left. Looks like we got a couple of questions on the phone.
Yeah, we got a couple added. So.
Okay, cool.
Oh, we do.
So why don't we do this? I'm going to go ahead and talk about this one quick thing, and then let's take some questions, and then we'll get back to some of the content. A little while ago, in the last call, I talked a little bit about oxytocin. And oxytocin is a chemical in your brain that is released at a certain specific moment. For most people, oxytocin is it's an overwhelming positive feeling. That's what it feels like. And you'll get it sometimes whenever you fall into deep sleep and a few other times throughout the day. It's like a feeling of elation and connectedness to everything. I believe oxycodone, also known as OxyContin, is a drug that attempts to stimulate this oxytocin release. Though oxycodone is really toxic in a lot of ways, so you got to be careful with that, and also can kill you if you combine it with alcohol. I lost two or three.
Okay.
What's that?
Okay.
I lost two or three friends in high school that way. Actually, they took OxyContin and then drank and died, sort of like all in a row. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But either way, oxytocin is a natural chemical in your brain, and oxytocin is released in women when they reach orgasm, and this is why women when they climax, they get really cuddly and like really connected, and they want to like snuggle and, you know, be all over you. And why most guys, whenever they after they come, they're like, all right, leave, you know. That's like, I don't want you to be here anymore. Like, they want to be alone and they want to be left by themselves to sort of do their own thing. So oxytocin is your friend and your enemy at the same time. It's your friend because in a relationship, you realize that oxytocin is very, very important in order to keep someone in love with you. It's actually important to make the woman that you're with reach climax and orgasm on a chemical level, because it recreates this feeling of connectedness and ultimately recreates this feeling of love. Now, if you're with somebody who is, who you're not trying to, be with monogamously, then you have to be very careful about releasing oxytocin. And I'm basically saying that you have to be careful about how many times you make her come. Because eventually, I know it sounds like a really crazy thing to say, but eventually, if you make her come too many times, she may have a strong, very, very strong and powerful tendency to give in to oxytocin and build rapport with you, and eventually demand that you are monogamous. So women sort of have this nurturing gene that turns on when they reach climax, and men have this procreation or, you know, repopulation gene that turns on whenever they climax. So as men, we typically want to leave and go our own way, and women typically want to stay down and nest up and, you know, raise a family. So if you do have skills in the bedroom, then, you know, you may want to actually pull back a little bit when you're polyamorous. And I'm not saying never make any other girls come. You may want to make them climax, especially in the very beginning when you first meet them. You want to make them do that. But you don't have to make it happen every time, and you definitely don't want to focus on it too much. And you don't want to bring everything out, like bring out all your big guns, because you'll basically make all these women want to be with you and only you forever. And that can be a problem if you're polyamorous. So keep that in mind. Brad, you want to go ahead and paraphrase the first question there?
Sure. It's from Kyle, and Kyle's wondering if we have any playful touching games that work pretty well, and at what point in the interaction would you use something like this?
A playful touching game. Okay, there's a few of these. One of them is a game I call 1 through 10, which I think I went over in another either another program or another founding members call. And that's where you do a sort of use an NLP anchoring technique. So it's a way to anchor a physical stimulation to her, to you touching her, like an emotion, sorry, to a physical stimulation like you touching her. And whenever you do this, whenever you use this technique, you basically reset her sensitivity on her body, on all of her skin, on her whole body. And that's really powerful, as you might imagine, to reset that sensitivity and to make her as sensitive or as, you know, insensitive to touch as you want. So it's kind of a powerful technique, and it's called 1 through 10. And 1 through 10 basically is whenever you say, I'll just sort of walk you through the process. You get in the point where you're in interaction with a woman. Now, if you're asking when you should do it, you can do the 1 through 10 game during rapport, because it's a deep, sort of seductive anchoring technique. If you're going to do something in banter, I'll give you another lighter, sort of playful physical technique, touch technique in a minute that'll sort of help that process. So the 1 through 10 You're sitting talking and you go, I have a question for you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good does this feel? All right, so you're looking in their eyes and you're also going to look, you're going to take your hand while you're doing this and you're going to pull out her arm. You're going to touch sort of the outside of her arm a little bit, just really lightly, and just stroke back and forth for a minute, and she'll give you a number. Say 10 is like orgasmic and 1 is painful, right? So now she's got to separate those in her mind, right? Orgasmic is the most amazing feeling, and painful, horrible, you know, I'm drowning and dying feeling is the other one. So obviously you're not going to get low on this scale. It's going to be above 5 because you're touching her. And that's what you want to do. You want to get her to think in her head that this is a plus, this is above 5, right? If you can do that, then you are, then you're going to be doing okay in the beginning. So she'll tell you, usually she'll say something like 6 or 7. You know, if she really likes you, she'll say a higher number. She's not even thinking. She'll just say whatever, right? She wants you to keep doing it. She'll give you a higher number. Then you go, okay, she'll give you a number. Let's say that's 6. Then you go, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good does this feel? And that's whenever you're going to turn her arm over and you're going to lightly touch the inside of her elbow. So like her, it's called her hinge of her arm, the hinge of her elbow. And you're going to lightly touch there. There's a lot of nerve endings right in the inside of your elbow. I know I have a tattoo there and it hurt like a motherfucker. So you're going to stroke really lightly right there. She'll give you a higher number this time because this is a more sensitive area, right? And she's going to be saying, oh, that's a 7 or that's an 8, right? So now she's 8. 10 is orgasmic, right? Now, she's not just saying this. She's also convincing herself that this is true, right? She's convincing herself that this is an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10, right? Let's say that she calls it a 7 just to be safe here, just so we're like, you know, we're pretty clear. So then you go, okay, that's interesting. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how good does this feel? And reach up and really lightly touch the outside of her neck. Really, really lightly. And just move your hand up and down on her neck for a minute. She'll probably close her eyes and feel it. And she'll say a number higher. She'll say, wow, that's an 8, right? Last one was 7, this one's an 8, right? So then you want to keep continuing to build this up until eventually you get to 9, or you can't say 10 yet because you don't want her to get to orgasmic yet, because then she'll reframe that orgasmic is not really orgasmic, right? You want her to keep orgasmic as a 10. So if she jumps to 10, then you're like, oh, wait, are you having an orgasm right now? Then that's not a 10, right? You need to like pull it back a little bit. So finally, since you have an 8 right then, you can do one of two things here. This is, you're going to jump to sexuality for a minute and really turn her on. This is an escalation game. So you're going to either do one of these two, if not both these techniques. One technique is to go, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good does this feel? And you're going to pull her arm up and actually gently kiss with your tongue, kiss, like suck on and kiss the inside of her elbow where you were touching earlier. And she'll give that like a 9 or something. Or maybe a 10, you got to be careful with that, but, you know, should do that. Or you can do that and this next one if you want to. The final one is really, 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 really powerful. You go, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good does this feel? And you're going to run your hand up the back of her head as if your palm is actually on her head in the back. And you're going to really gently squeeze your hand so that you have a handful of hair really close to her head, not like far out. You don't want to grab too far back. You want to grab it right at the base of her root, that her hair, really gently, and you want to tilt her head back so that her chin goes up. This is a really powerful sexual trigger for touch. You want to make sure that when you do this, you know, you know, be careful, make sure she doesn't have like a wig on or like a weave or something or extensions, because they'll freak out if you do this because you're afraid you're going to pull your weave out. but you got to be careful. But either way, just do that and pull her head back a little bit. And whenever you do that, you're showing a really strong and very powerful sexual dominance trait that will turn her on instantly and will jump you straight into seduction. Now, if you're trying to be lighthearted, then you can do one of plenty of games. Like, for example, Thumb War. Thumb War is a really easy game to play. It's lighthearted. It's fun. And you can play it during attraction. You can play it right in the middle of like, hey, you're my new girlfriend. Come over here and... You know, yeah. Can you cook? Okay, great. No, let's play Thumb War. Boom, boom, boom. You know, whatever. And just play Thumb War with her. You can do it right in the very beginning while you're bantering. My only suggestion for Thumb War is never lose at Thumb War. Always win. If you have to cheat, then cheat. Like, use your finger you know, and cheat if you want to. Because the point is to have fun. You want to be playful, but you don't want to lose at thumb war. So keep that in mind. You can also, for really simple kinesthetics, for games, you can do high fives. You know, that's a really fun one and easy, super easy. You can twirl girls, like spin them around like ballerina. You can bring them in like they're like a friend of yours and like hug them for a second off to the side and then let them go. But keep in mind that you're always going to want to only touch her for 1 to 3 seconds in the beginning. And that's sort of the point. In the beginning, you have temporary touch. And later on, you have deeper, longer periods of touch in different places. But in the beginning, you're going to be doing temporary touch. So keep that in mind. So that's that. Brad, do you want to go ahead and explain the next question?
Yes. This one is from Phil.
Hey, Phil.
And it's basically, Phil's asking, how do I sort of show other people my fun side, I guess? You know, he doesn't want to feel like the jester, the clown, but he wants to be able to, you know, be the fun guy at the club, you know, giving right. value.
Okay. So, yeah. This is a really good question. The thing that I've learned over time for sort of showing people my fun side is that I have to get into, when we talked about this a little bit at the attraction and action course, there's a stage that you have to get into, but they have to go through before you go out to a place that gets you in the proper mindset to allow yourself to have a great time and show your fun side. The important thing to do is to focus on something that makes you laugh before you walk in. Now, what happens is guys end up downward spiraling pretty badly, Phil. Like they'll get into a place, they'll walk in, and they'll think, I'm gonna turn it on later on. I'll be excited later on. I'll be fun later on, you know. And that's what they keep thinking. They keep convincing themselves that they're gonna do that. But whenever they get into the actual event and place, they end up sitting there by themselves, waiting for the right opportunity to turn it all on. And what they're doing is they're dropping value every second. They're becoming less attractive as men because they're not doing anything, right? So probably what's happening is you're probably getting to a place, Phil, where you're walking in, you're kind of like waiting, chilling out, watching everything happen, and then you're like, I'm gonna go have fun, but you can't do that because at that point you've already sort of downward spiraled, and then everyone's gonna give you negative reactions because you're sitting by yourself or you're not talking to anybody or you were standing, guarding yourself a little bit with your body language, and they don't know why it is that they're weirded out, but they'll be weirded out by you for that.
He's been through Hacking Attraction, and he's INTP, by the way.
Oh, INTP. Okay, I'm an ENTP. You would be, it would be great for you to be out in an environment like a bar or a loud place, because INTPs, for example, if anyone knows David D'Angelo, ever heard of him before, he is an INTP. And he teaches guys how to do this stuff, you know. But what you have to do is, here's what you'll do. You'll end up doing exactly what David does. And that is, he sort of allows himself to become almost somebody else whenever he goes out. Like, he says, okay, well, I'm just going to go out and have a great time. And I'm going to have a blast. And then he comes home and he's, like, totally alone and a completely different guy whenever he's home. And, like, really calm and by himself a lot often and doesn't really talk to that many people. But whenever he wants to go out and attract women, he turns it all on. You know, and that's really what he does. That's how he handles this stuff. So Phil, if you're that kind of, if you're an INTP as well, then you want to make sure that you, and by the way, INTP is a process that he figured out by going through Hacking Attraction. It's another program that I have. If you don't have it, then definitely want to check it out. You probably have it in your members area, at least the first day of it. If you want the rest of it, then you can email Brad@thedowofbadass.com, and Brad will hook you up with a link to get that program to buy it. But Phil, most important thing for you to know is that whenever you get out there, you have a time limit on how long you can do this. So you cannot afford, because as time goes on, you will get more tired in the place that you're at. You'll get worn out. As time goes on, you will not be able to turn it on more and more and more. It'll be harder and harder for you to turn it on throughout the night. So what you want to do instead is you want to go hard in the very beginning, like really go all out in the very beginning, and then isolate relatively quickly so you can get your one-on-one time with your chick that you want to hang out with. Otherwise, you'll burn out pretty quickly, and you won't be able to stay there for too long. So, but you also have amazing powers with some of your rapport will probably have amazing rapport powers as well. So you want to make sure that you focus on that too. But really, when you go out, you want to stay at that lighthearted sort of space. One way you can do that to stay lighthearted is to never look down when you're at a bar. When you look down, you access your emotional brain. So if you look down for a split second, you access your emotional brain, and that makes you emotional. And that as soon as that happens, you can downward spiral. So try just looking up. And also, if you can't control your mind, as in your mind's kind of wandering and you can't really like get a handle on it, then you want to control your body. Meaning you want to make sure that you're focusing on keeping your body language correct and proper, using negative body language properly, things like that, because that will keep your mindset proper. If you can do that, then you're all good. If you can't do that, then you're going to downward spiral, like I said. So keep that in mind. Let's go ahead and go to the phones real quick. We've got Lance, I believe. I think this is actually Lance. I'm going to unmute you, Lance, and you're in Phoenix. So I think this is the Lance that I know.
Lance.
Yep. One second, let me see. Oh, it's just decided to refresh right when I clicked on here. Lance, you there? Lance, can you hear me? Hey, Lance, you there? I can barely hear him.
Yeah, he sounds really quiet.
Lance, are you whispering? I think he's either talking in his sleep or he just stepped away for a second right when I clicked on him. So,
can we turn the volume up here on him?
I don't think he's at the horn here. I can't, Brad, I can't mute him out. Can you mute him out for me? I'm for some reason having a hard time muting him out.
Yeah, he's muted.
So if he comes back, we'll get to his question. But we just got to listen to Lance's home life, so that was really important. We all feel closer to him now. So Brad, why don't you go ahead and describe the next question we got here, and we'll continue to just go down the list. If you guys have any questions and they're on the phone, feel free to press *2 right now, and it'll put you in order, and I'll just get to your questions and unmute you as I go. Don't be nervous or shy. Just open right up and ask me. I'm not going to laugh at you or anything unless you make a funny joke, and then I might laugh at you. Can Brad, speaking of laughing at you,
what?
Can you read the next question in the voice of Gollum? I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that. I was trying to get somebody to get you to use your Gollum voice in this. Brad's got does amazing impersonations of all, a whole bunch of stuff, but one of them is a.
I'll bust it out. One last thing that Phil asked is when we were doing our boot camp in LA. So maybe if you guys make it out to that, then I'll bust out the Gollum voice.
Okay, good. Yeah, the boot camp in LA is when again, Brad? I don't have it on my right in front of me.
I don't either.
Okay, well, we looked that up while we're doing this, so I can.
Yeah,
you can tell him.
Yeah, thanks. If you're interested, you know, email me brad@thedowofbadass.com. I'll let you know.
I believe it is early next year.
Yeah, I think it's in January.
Yeah. So check it out. I'm gonna be, obviously it's my home, it's where I live, it's my hometown. So if you do want to show up for that one, we do have some seats left in that boot camp, which is great. So email brad@thedowofbadass.com and we'll be able to hook you up there. For that boot camp, anybody who shows up is getting an iPad 2. So if you want to get on that before it closes out and we fill up the seats and you want to get an iPad 2 on top of it, we're gonna load the iPad 2 up with some Dow of Badass super awesome stuff. And you'll be able to get some notes on there. Let's see.
All right.
Go ahead, yeah.
So yeah, Edwin has the next question, and we'll just move on to part 2 of his question.
Okay.
So how does one start to create mystery again with an ex or a girl that knows you very well already without getting the "you're acting strange" or "you're being so cryptic"?
You know what's funny is that I wanted to hear what you just said, but I was busy reading his part 1 because you got me intrigued. And because he says, okay, this call cost a bunch of dough. I don't know. If you're, it's a 1-800 number, you know, so it shouldn't cost anything unless you're like, I don't know, you're out of the country, but it says you're in Los Angeles, so you're probably good there, Edwin. anyway, so say that again, Brad, I didn't hear you.
Basically, how do you sort of I think what he's asking is how do you deal with girls who have known you for a really long time as you start to like go down this journey of self-improvement and you start to make changes on the inside and then you start making changes on the outside, you know, you're going to start getting some maybe some weird reactions from girls who have known you, like exes or just people who know you really well. And how do you deal with that reaction of like you're acting weird, you know?
Right. Okay. So here's the problem with here's a main problem that everyone who's on this call is going to run into. So definitely pay attention to this. I ran into it as well. Everyone who improves himself in any capacity runs into this at some point. And that is what's called the Diamond Principle. The Diamond Principle states that people will only accept massive change in you if you've undergone one of two things. And those two things are time, long period of time that you've been gone, or the second thing is pressure. They believe that you've gone through a lot of pressure lately. So people will not accept change in you for pretty much any other reason, period. If they know that, like, for example, you know, if you're acting strange when they found out your mother just died, then they would accept everything that you're doing, right? But if you're acting strange and they found out that you had an epiphany, they won't accept that. You know, that's not how it works. Or, you know, you came across something. People only think, and this is just typical of us, people only think that change comes from time, a long period of time, and pressure. So if you do rapid change, you're going to run into a lot of opposition from people that you currently know. And that's going to be a problem. So instead of what I here's what I like to do. I like to, when I see somebody that I already know, I like to, before I do anything else, I already know them, so I'm going to walk up and go, hey, you know, what have you been doing? They'll say, oh, I've been doing this. What about you? Like, well, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff lately, and it's really changed my outlook on a lot of things, and I feel very different, you know? And I don't want to talk about it right now, but you know, maybe sometime, but not right now. And it's made me a very different person. I feel much more comfortable in my own skin now. It's really great. And then go right into bantering and doing whatever the hell you want to. You know, at this point, no one will question you. But if you don't give them that reason for pressure, because obviously time isn't going to be a factor. It's not going to be, you're not going to be able to say, well, I haven't seen you in 20 years. You know, like, well, I saw you last week. What the hell are you talking about? You know? So you have to use pressure to your advantage. And no one knows that you went through pressure except you. So it's not fair, really, that they judge you and don't let you change like this. But it's sort of in our nature. It's not really their fault. And that's why I don't feel bad by saying, look, I've been through a lot of stuff lately, and it's really changed who I am, you know? Even if I haven't really been through that much stuff lately and it hasn't really changed that much of who I am, I just want them to let go of who they think I am and let me be who I want to be, you know? And that's how I sort of got around that. The Diamond Principle will hold you back in any situation that you're in, period, as long as you are changing rapidly around the people that you're with. So definitely use the Diamond Principle for that, Edwin. It's going to be really powerful and it will help you out a whole lot during that process. And if any of you guys run into it, I've heard a lot of people explain this in a lot of different ways, and they all have the same exact problem. Hang on, sorry. A lot of people have the same problem, and they just don't ever deal with it. They just kind of get all new friends. And you may have to get new friends. If someone doesn't let you change and grow, you may have to let them go, dude, because you can't surround yourself with people who don't want you to grow. That's one of the reasons why the Tao members area is so important to you guys. Because you can go in there and you're surrounded by guys who are constantly growing. And you forget sometimes that other people outside of that group are not growing. They just don't do that. So remember that and keep that in mind as you move forward. You want to go on with the next one, Brad?
Yes. This is from Jonathan. In relationship balance, is it more about doing what we want or calibrating her and giving her what you think she wants or what you think she'd be okay with in the moment? If you want to attract or seduce, but you know she isn't ready for it / isn't in the mood, what do you do since transitioning between stages isn't sequential anymore?
That's a good question.
She's your wife and she's not in a good mood all the time.
Oh, that's a great question. So in a situation like that, if a girl's like not in the mood for sex, so to speak, what you want to do is not start out in rapport. That's a really good insight. Since you're jumping around, you're not going to be starting out in rapport, trying to move your way on. But what you could do, and this is something that's kind of sneaky, You could start out in attraction, then go to rapport right after that. And the sequence in her mind, subconsciously in her mind, will begin to make her think about sex. So you'll go through attraction, through the different stages of attraction. Of course, you'll skip intro because she already knows who you are. You're going to go to demonstrating high value, bantering, that kind of stuff. You won't really need to qualify her very much because she's already there. But maybe you want to. Maybe you want to say like, oh, you know, I never knew that about you. You know, blah, blah, blah. That's pretty cool, actually. I really appreciate that. And then you go into a little bit of rapport and then just start doing the exercises, the sort of transitioning exercises, and do what's called the VET method. That's V-E-T-T. And that is changing your vocal tonality, your eye contact, your touch, and your topic of conversation all at the same time to be in unison all at the same time to be more of seductive and less of rapport. And when you do that, you'll transition so smoothly into seduction that you can become sexual with that person. Now, if you are in a relationship with someone and they're not in the mood all the time, and that's sort of the, you know, let's say that's what it is, you know, your goal is to get into another stage. Let's say that your goal is to get into bantering, right? And she's always serious and always seductive, but she never banters and is lighthearted. Then you can't just jump straight into banter in any given moment. You have to make sure that you're not currently in rapport whenever you jump to banter. Because if you do that, she'll still see that as a negative thing, even though it's not in any sequential order. So if you're in rapport, you can't jump straight to banter. In the middle of rapport, you have to like let the rapport cool down, and then you can jump to banter in the relationship. So keep that in mind. And if you want her to go straight through like all of them, then you can force them in order. And by the time you get through towards some of the deep rapport, you'll have her sort of starting to get turned on around you, and that seduction process will be very clear and very easy to manage. So keep that in mind. That should help you out a lot if you're in that situation. But if you don't want to go into seduction, you want to go into a different step, a different stage, then it does kind of pop into a different process. You just need to, there's not as much thinking involved. The only thing that will have a lot of thinking involved, again, is going to be the example that you gave, which is sex or seduction. If you want to jump into that process, then you have to really think about it and sometimes start from the very beginning. What's the next one, Brad?
This is a question I think a lot of guys will be wondering. If you forget to mention polyamory during attraction, is there any way to mention it after rapport without getting a negative reaction?
This is a good question. The answer is, let's see, let me just make sure I understand the question. Is there any way to mention it? Yes, there is. Without getting a negative reaction, yes. There is a way to do it. Will it work every time? No. There's no, like, guarantee that it's going to work. When you get past attraction and you're, even if you're after rapport, meaning you've already slept with a girl, then, and you want to get into it without getting a negative reaction, you have to mention it. You have to mention it as if it's not a big deal. You know, you can't say, I need to tell you something. This is really important. Why don't you sit down? Can I take that? You know, let me put your feet up. Let me lock the door. You know, you don't want to start like making it a big deal and making a big fuss out of it. You have to just go, you have to really let it cool down. Like, I wouldn't do it right after sex. You know, that's really sneaky. Typically, what I would do is I would, if you're going to bring it up again, I would go back into attraction, then bring it up. I wouldn't bring it up while you're in rapport or seduction. So if you've already gone through, like, say you had sex with a girl, you need to start bantering and being playful and fun. Ask her a couple of questions about her past relationships and run straight into polyamory. You know, she may still be hurt, though, and there's really no way to tell for sure. So keep that in mind, and just make sure that, you know, if you don't say it in attraction and you want to say it later on, and you're already past attraction and it's too late, then you've already screwed up, you know? So anything that works is great. It's like, you know, it's a plus one, you know? If you don't sort of do the polyamory, drop the poly dating sort of bomb in the beginning, as I call it, the polyamory bomb in the beginning, then you are going to automatically subject yourself to whatever outcome happens. You really can't control it that much. So keep that in mind. I definitely don't recommend it, but I understand your situation. And I've been there before. Like, something just happened. I'd start to drink, and I'd just totally forget to bring up rapport. Or sorry, bring up the polyamory bomb. And it would just screw it up completely, you know? And later on, I had to I had to sort of backpedal and make it work. But it's a chess game, man. You can't just drop your bomb right there and just be like, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this before we had sex, but I got another girl coming over in 20 minutes. She's also my girlfriend. But we're cool about it. So see you later. You know, you're not going to be doing that. So that can be a big, big problem. So, Brad, you want to move on to the next one?
Yes.
Yes.
Jonathan is asking, what are different ways of building attraction in relationship balance aside from banter? Or should this be what we focus on? You mentioned before that games stop. What games? If there's no more qualifying, how do we make her earn it and challenge her within the relationship?
Okay, so let me just make sure I get this straight here. Okay.
So,
go ahead. Go ahead and explain it again, just so I can get your take on this.
It sounds like he's sort of he's associating the attraction stage of an interaction with banter, which is a good thing. But
that's a good thing. Yep.
But how do you bring that idea into a relationship?
Right. Okay. So in attraction, during the attraction phase, while you're in the middle of attraction, you can, when you say, he said what games, right? He doesn't know what game's talking about. I mean, like role playing. I mean, being silly, lighthearted. I mean, giving your negative body language. That's a game. You know, you're playing sort of this cat and mouse in the beginning of an interaction. And, yeah, as far as the qualifying goes, you said if there's no more qualifying, how do we make her earn it and challenge her? You don't. At this point, she's already earned it. You only make her earn it once. So if you're in the beginning of an interaction, she doesn't know. The reason why you want to make her earn it is very simple. You want to make her earn it because she doesn't believe that being attractive is enough to attract a man. She thinks she has to have something else that makes you want her. And if you don't give her that thing, she'll think that you're desperate and that you would have been with any woman who came along. So you have to show her that there's some other reason besides looks that you dig about her that is drawing you to her, right? That makes her different than other girls. And you have to show her that quality. Now, I don't think you should make something up here. I definitely think that you should tap into exactly what she, what you believe about her, what you see in her. But you really have to draw that out. And once you do that, you don't have to do it anymore. It's not, you don't have to keep going, well, it'd be like this. It'd be like going, I don't know if I like you or not because you're hot and everything, but it's not really normal. That's normal. I see a lot of hot women. What else is there about you that's pretty cool? And then she says something, you go, wow, that's really awesome. You know what? I do like you. You're pretty cool. And then you sleep with her and you go, or after you sleep with her, you go, you know, I just slept with you, but I don't really know if I should like you. You know, what is it that makes you different? See how that's kind of incongruent? It doesn't really make any sense. She's going to be like, what do you mean, dude? You know, you just slept with me and now you're doing this. This is weird. So instead of doing that, rapport is there, but qualifying is gone. So if you are going to be building attraction, it's literally just bantering. It's literally just being lighthearted. It's just being playful. It is dancing with her in public whenever she's a little bit embarrassed. You know, it is... playing little fun word games with her, like punch buggy or something. Don't hit her too hard, obviously. Like little fun games where you're just like being lighthearted, kind of like a little playful little boy. And that's what allows you to sort of be that, bring in that banter part of the interaction into your relationship. So that should clear that up. Yeah, it's the games that you're gonna be playing are like psychological games, really, where you are getting her to laugh and question herself a little bit and like, you know, forcing her to sort of let you lead the interaction. And then after you get through, you know, the sex process where you're being sexual or consummating sex in some kind of way and seduction, then you're not going to be so much around qualifying at all, of course. And then around, really focusing on like the demonstrating high value in the way that you really need to actually have to do it in order to move on to the next stage. You're just going to be doing it to balance it out instead. So it becomes really, really, really free flowing and really a lot less structured in relationship balance. So that should help out a little bit. Brad?
All right. Victor has another question. Where can I learn more of the avatar concept?
The Avatar is a product that I have never released. I'm not finished with it yet, so I should be done with it in a couple of months. And it is going to be a training course on how to type women and how to seduce, attract, get their numbers, what to text them, how to build rapport with them, how to follow up with them afterwards, exactly what to do in a long-term relationship with each one of these different avatars. And it's a really, really powerful one. It's funny because whenever you used it, Brad, it was like, oh, shit, she's a romantic, so I'll just do this. And it worked, you know?
Yeah.
And before that, it was like, you know, things weren't really working as well as you really wanted them to, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a very, very powerful idea. So, Victor, I don't blame you for wanting to know more about it. But it's not available yet to the public. So I'll have to just wait until it comes out. But keep an eye on it. And it's a really, really awesome program that I'm going to be producing. I may not call it the Avatars, but I'll mention the Avatars in it, so you'll know it's about the Avatars when you see it. So check it out for sure. All right, I see this question from Eddie. Eddie, I'm in Los Angeles, dude. So looks like you are too. He asked me, where do I live? Hope you don't mean an address. Like, did I piss you off or something? You're going to show up with like a baseball bat? and then he says, yeah, where am I broadcasting from? I'm broadcasting from LA, and Brad's here in LA too, so we're both here with you, Eddie. I believe, guys, if you're in LA, this weekend I was going to try to meet up with a couple of guys at a bar and just like have some drinks. If you're going to be in the west side of LA, shoot Brad at the Dow of Badass an email, and it's just, you know, if you want to meet me and just hang out for a little bit, it'd be really cool to meet up with you and chat over this weekend. I'm not sure if it'll be Saturday or Sunday, but one of those days. Just kind of swing out and for about an hour or so, hang out, maybe an hour and a half, hang out and just talk to everybody and hang out. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there. Brad, yes. You want to go for the next one? Next question? And we're going to wrap these up pretty soon, but we're getting through questions pretty quickly.
Yeah, just a few more from our good buddy Phil.
Okay.
He was following up with the touch games thing. If you touch a girl too frequently, how will you know? You mentioned too long, but is too frequently just as bad?
Too frequently is only bad if it's considered the same touch. Like, you don't want to like take one hand off and in the same exact moment put another hand on, and then just like constantly touch with different hands but take them off constantly to switch them out. Too frequent. I've never met a guy who touches too frequently. Is it possible for you to touch too frequently? I'm sure it is. I'm sure that there's some guy in the world somewhere that touches way too frequently. That doesn't touch too much, but just too frequently. But I've never met the guy. If you've ever fallen in the friend zone, I can guarantee you that you don't touch nearly as much as you need to, and that you can probably increase the amount that you touch by 3-4 times the amount that you're touching now. So, I don't think that you really need to worry about touching too frequently. Of course, if you touch too frequently, it's bad. Of course it is, because anything with the word too in front of it is not good. You know, like this is too much, or this is too slow, or this is too fast. You know, it's all assumes that it's not good. It's bad. It's too much. It's in excess of, in a bad way. So yeah, if you touch too much, yeah, it is. But I've never met anybody that touched too frequently. I've met guys who touch for too long, too early, but that's all I've seen.
He just said, last call you talked about calling it out. Wait, never mind. That's a different, unrelated thing. He had one more question about touch, which was, how do those touch games work in noisy club venues?
So if you're going to do if you're going to be in a really loud venue, you want to focus a lot more on games that aren't games, as in like, you know, touch in a way that doesn't require you to say anything. Like the universal signal for a high five is a hand up in the air with the palm facing them, you know, and a smile. If you're doing that and you're making a frowny face, they're gonna think you're gonna slap them. But besides that, you know, if you put your hand up like this and you're about to give a high five, people will give you a high five. A high five is fine. If it's really loud, you can still pull them in and like, you know, as in like pull them around and do as if they're just your friend and let them go. You can still spin them. You can still do all the touch things that you need to do. You don't need to talk to them too much when it's very loud anyway. Instead, you want to keep your mouth away, because if you're trying to talk in a really loud venue, it typically means that you're needy. It means that you need to have a conversation, because if you don't start talking to this girl, she's not going to think that you're attractive, you know? So instead, you want to be really lighthearted and fun for the majority of the interaction until you can get to a place that's a little bit quieter. Then you can start to, or a little bit off to the side. It's not in the middle of the dance floor. And then you can start to do games. You don't want to walk up to a girl who's dancing and go, "Hey, thumb war." She won't do it. You know, she'll be like, "I'm dancing. I don't want to do that right now." You know, so you want to make sure that what you're doing is congruent for where you are. That's the most important thing. It's more important than anything else, is that like the obvious stuff is important. Like, I'm asking her to play thumb war when she's on the dance floor dancing. That's strange. Yes, that is strange. It's not going to work. You know, it won't work nearly as well as if you were flirting with her, dancing with her a little bit, then you pulled her away from the dance floor, and then you started bantering with her a little bit and, you know, going to all the different games that you have. So keep that in mind. Phil, you also had a question about, you said you're interested in the boot camp in LA. Brad will email you information on that as well, so you can check that out. Or we'll probably get on the phone with you. So you can do that, and he'll give you information.
Yeah, anybody who's interested in the LA hangout this weekend too, just email me, brad@thedowofbadass.com, and we'll figure that out as well.
Email some gross pictures to brad@thedowofbadass.com.
Oh, yeah, thanks for that, Josh.
So we have one more question on here, and I think that's it for this call. And we're going to have to get not next week, but the week after that is our next call. And we're going to get to a few other things. We're actually going to talk about personality types, cheating, grass is always greener mentality, about confrontation, how to do it properly, about how to give ultimatums in a way that actually helps a relationship, a little bit about sex, about relationship boundaries for either of you, about where you should be, where hers should be, and things like that, how to know if someone's crossing the boundaries. I have exclusive here. I don't know why I put that. I think it was an extra thing I was adding on, and that is I'm going to talk about my 30-day notice method. That isn't my idea. It was actually David DeAngelo's idea, but I really loved it, and I've been using it in my relationship. That's really helped out a lot. And then I'm going to go over the 6 rules of long-term attraction if we have time to go through all that. So, Brad, one last question, and then we're going to call it a night here with a capital K.
I was curious as to if Lance had a question. If he happens to,
if he can hear us, Lance. If you can hear us, dude, and you still do have a question, press *2 on your phone and raise your hand. I'm not sure what was going on earlier. I think you brought us into the toilet or something. I don't know what's happening, but if you're there and you hear us, buddy, go ahead. Actually, I think he's still on the call. If you're on the call and you have a question, press *2. Oh. Lance,
he raises his hand.
We'll get to you. But if you don't do it by the end of this call, we'll just have to get to you next time. So, Brad, go ahead and ask the next question.
He just raised his hand.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't see it on my screen. My computer's being weird.
It raised his hand, and then it went away.
Okay. Well, if you want to keep it up, press *2, Lance. There it is. Okay. All right, Lance, I'm going to unmute you. You can go and ask your question, buddy. Hey, Lance, you there?
Yeah. Hey, Joshua.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Hey, we can hear him.
Hey, I just want to say it was really great to meet Joshua, Brad, and Jay, and everybody in Las Vegas.
Yeah, man, it was such a great time. We had a really awesome time, and you got a lot of information that I think a lot of guys, we got a lot of it early, obviously. Guys haven't gotten that information yet, and I know Brad's used it since, and I know a lot of guys who have been there have been sort of like tapping into some of their notes and really taking it out and using a lot of the concepts, so... I'm really pumped, and it was fantastic to meet you as well. And I'm glad to see that you're on the Founding Members Club call. I don't think I've ever seen you on here before. So
yeah. Well, I've been, you responded to a couple of my blogs, and I just put on one recently, which I thought would inspire you. When we were doing the first day in your penthouse, we talked about me being an internal frame.
Yep.
And creating a situation where a woman would come to me.
Oh, I did see that. How you had the party going on?
I went to a very swanky resort where an old girlfriend who's an artist was putting on a reception. Mm-hmm. And she had like these 3 or 4 totally hot chicks with her, girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And I told them I have great parties at my house. And they said, why don't you invite us?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, sure. So now I'm having a cocktail party on the 19th. We're like... 10 nice. Gorgeous women.
That doesn't
so
sound
I've
too
kept
bad.
Them coming to me.
All right.
This is exactly what I meant, man. You know what's funny? Is I actually created a company whenever I was in living in North Carolina. I created a company called Martini and Company. And Martini and Company was really, to be honest, was just a dummy company and a reason for me to throw parties, right? So I made a job out of this, and I said, you know what, I'm a party planner. And so we had party planners and hosts for hire. That's what we were. So we would like host the party or we would plan the party. And we would just hire ourselves out. And we got hired several times while I had this business to come out and just dress awesome and talk to people. And that's what we did. We were like, we'd toast and everything in the party. And we were like, we just were those guys who were like gregarious and fun. And people paid us to come out and do that. They also paid us to plan parties and make them all work. So what I did is I would say, hey, look, Martini and Pump Company's having a party. And I would just invite everybody I know. You know, and then when I was polyamorous, I'd invite, you know, several, maybe six of the seven women that I was dating, and they'd all show up, you know? And now all of a sudden I'm in a room with six women that are attracted to me and a bunch of guys who are like, holy crap, look at all these women, you know? So what I would do for you, just to make sure, Lance, that I kind of get, put this bug in your ear, make sure that you invite some guys to this party. Like, I know that sounds
No, I have. No, I'm going for a balanced gender ratio.
Great.
With slightly more females. I just invited another chick I know.
Cool.
So it's going to be like 8 to 10 guys and maybe 10 to 12 women.
Perfect. You know, and generally speaking, too, if you're going to be throwing parties, expect that about 30% of the people that you invite will actually show up. Just expect that.
No, I remember you said that, and okay, cool. I've nailed down. These are the solid people that will be there.
Cool, man.
Because I don't want to waste time. This is costing me a little bit of money. I just don't want to, you know, order extra food and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah,
These are all solid. I've got 8 to 10, like, Russian women and other hot chicks that are coming.
You guys, if you're in Phoenix, Arizona, you may want to befriend Lance. Might make things a little bit easier for you. Awesome.
Well,
Lance,
I had a question. I had a question in my blog comment that you hadn't answered. Mm-hmm. And I'm confident about the party. Just mm-hmm. I found this really beautiful woman that plays jazz guitar. She's going to play in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a bartender. And mm-hmm. A friend of mine owns an Italian restaurant. He's going to cater it at a great price. So it's going to be really low cost to have like 10, 12 women in my house and like 10 of my buddies.
Right.
But as a host, I'm in a position where I've created this event. I'm a leader. You know, mm-hmm. I'm making shit happen.
Yep.
So how should I transmit myself to the room? Because this is a golden opportunity with, like, you know, 10 or 12 women and some of my best buds and new friends. Mm-hmm. I've made this happen. My house is going to rock. I've got tiki torches in the patio and, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So how can I transmit? Because a real man makes shit happen, and I made this happen.
Right. So the way that you, all you want to do, and this is like sort of counterintuitive when it comes to this stuff, you have to be busy during this party. I mean, you got to like just make sure everyone's having a good time. Just go around and talk to everybody. That's your only job. You know, if you see a couple people hanging out by themselves talking a really deep conversation, then you let them do that. But if it's people who are just like, if you see somebody there and they're like not really talking to many people, you want to introduce the guys to the girls, like, hey man, come over here and meet my friend, and then just take a dude, one of your friends, and go over, hey, you know, I want to introduce you guys. You know, you're both into 18th century Mongolian architecture. You know, you can make something up, but
right. But, like, you're into iTunes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I heard that you. You both are friends with Tom on MySpace, but like, you know, it's you want to get it. You want to make sure that you get people mingling and talking and having a good time, and you know, just make sure that people are light and fun and everyone's sort of following your rules. You know, there's almost always there's a group of people that sit like outside or something, or sit in a smaller group and they're like chilling and they're drinking and they're just laughing and they're by themselves, and you can join that group. Or it can be part of, like, the middle of everything that's happening. Make sure everybody's got a drink, you know, all that stuff. Even if you're not the person making all the drinks, you want to be the person to make sure.
No, I have a bar. I'm hiring a bartender to mix the martinis. So.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, shit, man. Yeah, you got a lot of stuff handled.
Sounds like a hell of a party. I want to go to Phoenix.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. You guys got to come and do a thing out here, man. I can build up a response.
Well, that sounds good to me, man. We'll be out there. I love it. So I'm just about to start my DAO tour for this next year, and I haven't done a tour in over 3 years. So I'd love to.
Well, you know, Phoenix and Scottsdale has like some really hot nightclubs. It has a good nightclub scene. So for that younger market, you could, you know, target them.
I like markets. Yeah, especially younger ones.
Well, I have an MBA. I have an MBA, so I understand markets.
Yeah. That means that you went to school to learn about business.
I have another quick question.
Sure.
I was at a wine bar last night, and I bumped into an old flame. We broke up like 6 months ago, and she's like absolutely gorgeous. We weren't compatible, but I was really attracted to her. So breaking up really hurt because she was really beautiful, but we were just totally polar opposites, you know, because she's a control freak and blah, blah, blah. And so I got an email this morning, and she goes, you know, I still have some of your clothes and stuff at my house, and I want to, like, meet for lunch and, you know, give you that stuff and get closure.
Right.
How should I approach that? I kind of like, I mean, she's a beautiful, she's like a 9.8, but she's like neurotic and controlling. And,
right. Well, I mean, you know, I think this is.
But I'm feeling a lot of hurt, too, because I'm really attracted to her, but I know it doesn't work.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think that in this situation, and this is just until you get your head clear, my suggestion to you on this would be to just get her stuff and then sort of go, look, I would like to talk to you a little more, but not this week. Like, just let me clear my head for about a week.
She has my stuff. I used to spend all of my weekends there. She has my clothes.
Your stuff, okay.
Yeah, and she wants to give it back, and she wants closure. She goes, you know, we're ending the year, and
yeah, I would give her closure, dude.
Well, I
really would. I mean, I would meet up with her in a place that's like coffee, and just like talk about what you've gone through since then, and really try to keep the flame from rekindling, because you really can't afford to push through and like get back in this relationship again right in the middle of everything that you're going through right now. You know, if you know,
I don't want to go back. I never wanted. She's the one who wanted to be. She said, "I want to be your girlfriend," and I never wanted to be. But she was so beautiful; it was, you know, like a drug. You know,
I know the feeling.
It's like, and she's a good person. I care about her, but it's never going to work.
Right.
You know?
Well, just tell her that. You know, she needs closure. She needs to hear you say that. What most guys do, and what I would, you know, I'm guessing what happens most time to most people, but definitely has happened to me. Is that we don't want to lose an option, so we end up we'd rather string a girl along for a long period of time, but that's not really fair to her. You know, you got to give her closure and let her move on. You have other fish to fry, you have other women to meet, you know, and she can't keep hanging on, so you got to let her go, man. You know, I know it's
hard
to do.
Well, I knew that after we pulled the plug, I met another beautiful woman, and I had intense sexual attraction chemistry. So that only proved to me that I wasn't attracted to her like I should be.
Right. Well, yeah, man. I think you got your head on straight. I think you know what to do here. You know, just I would definitely give her closure there, Lance. That's definitely something I would do. So
yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Well,
really.
You know what? I have to tell you, I have a men's group. I think I told you when I was there. It meets a couple times a month at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I did your negative body language presentation to my group.
Mm-hmm.
And they fucking loved it.
Awesome.
they were like, it was like somebody turned on a light, and they go, oh, we didn't know that was part of the deal.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very powerful thing. Just to explain to everyone who's on the call right now, I talked to Lance a little bit about negative body language, using negative body language, and also and not just in presentations, but also just talking about negative body language in general. And we talked a lot about it in our attraction and action course, and we did a lot of demonstrations, and a lot of guys we're able to get up and actually practice right in front of everybody, and I can give constant feedback. So it was one of those things that we talked about. So that's awesome, man. Thanks, Lance, man. I really appreciate you speaking up, man. Try to get on the next call in a couple of weeks too, if you can.
Yep, and my best wishes to all you guys. I think you're top shelf.
Ah, thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lance.
All right.
Hope you get to enjoy some top shelf in the next couple of days here. So. All right, guys. Well, I think that's it. Let's see. Last call. You talked about calling it out. I'll just do one or two more questions here. Eddie, first off, Eddie, he's got a kind of a personal question, but I'll answer it. Why don't you tell me how long he's got, apparently his ex-girlfriend, just to let everyone in on this. Apparently Eddie's ex-girlfriend's name is Kelsey, and he wants to make sure that I'm not dating his ex-girlfriend. which is awesome. So that's no big deal. Just tell me where your ex-girlfriend's from, and I'll tell you where, if whether it's her or not. So just do that real quick. I'm sure it's not. Kelsey's actually a pretty common name, so that was bound to happen. That's pretty humorous. But no, it's not her. I can almost guarantee you that. But tell me where she's from, and I'll look at it right now. Just type it in the Q&A box. The last question then is, it says, last call, you talked about calling it out when your value goes up. Okay, so that's like in relationship balance. So if your value goes up in a relationship, you have to call it out. It says, what should you do if your value goes down? Well, the simplest way to answer this is call it out. You have to mention either way. If it goes up or down, you need to mention and call it out in your relationship and say, you know, okay, well, this is something that happened to me. I lost my job, and now I feel like I've – let's say it's lost your job, right? That's a really common one. You know, I lost my job, and now I feel like I'm worth nothing, and I need you to help me get through this because I'm feeling really crappy about it, you know? Instead, what most guys do is they get super needy or they get really jealous because they're just trying to, like – they think the other person's going to leave them because their value dropped outside the relationship. So instead of automatically doing that, you want to focus instead on just calling out exactly what happened and saying how you feel because of the value change. You don't want to say, oh, I feel really needy, or you're getting really needy, or you don't need me anymore, or you're off with some other guy, that kind of stuff, which usually ruins a relationship. You want to instead to focus on the value decrease or increase and calling that out instead. So just make sure you focus on that and make sure that you call it out and you're really open about it, and you should be good if you do that. So no worries, man. All right, guys, I think that's it. I haven't heard back from Eddie. Just rest assured, shoot me an email, Eddie, and I'll talk to you over email about this stuff. So you can relax, though. I'm 99.9 billion% sure that that's not the same girl. But it would be very interesting. If it is the same girl, I'm gonna have to talk to you, because we'll probably need to chat for a bit. But anyway, thanks guys so much. Brad, thanks for being here and being Jesus. And everyone, thanks for showing up on this call and being a part of this. I appreciate it very, very much. If you have any questions whatsoever, if you want to be a part of okay, so Eddie, I get it. Santa Cruz, California. No, she's not. Or San Francisco. My girlfriend's from Florida, so. And thanks. He gave me some props on the programs. That's good. So I think that, though, if you're thinking about this, Eddie, if you're thinking about your ex-girlfriend that much and she's kind of freaking you out still, you should probably take that as a sign that it's something that you need to focus on. There was an interview I did with Dan Dinnick in the members area under the resources tab. So if you go under resources, you'll see like a let me see exactly what it says. One second here. Just so I can get this right. I click on resources and then you're going to click on Joshua Pelissier's Masterclass Interview Series. And you'll get to a page that shows a bunch of interviews that I've done. Lots of interviews now. One of them is Dan Dinnick. And it says, Dan Dinnick, Get Over Your Ex. That's like, we talked a lot about getting over your ex-girlfriend and what that process entails and everything in that interview. So check it out, and you'll get a lot of really powerful concepts from that interview. I think you'll gain a lot from it, because you can't really move forward at all until you let go of your ex. It's kind of how it is. You need that closure. So thank you guys very much for being a part of this. I appreciate it. And let's continue this in 2 weeks from now. So that'll be, I don't have my calendar right in front of me ever, apparently, but whatever, 2 weeks from now, not next Thursday, but the Thursday after that. Show up again. You'll get an email reminding you, and I'll talk to you guys then. Thanks again, Brad. And thanks everyone else for being here. I'll talk to you soon.